To that end, Congress adopted a law providing for the oath as its very first act. Congress's second act, a measure less inspiring, was a protective tariff on a long list of imported goods ranging from molasses to pickled fish. The original oath was sparer than the one now prescribed. It read simply, "I do solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States." At the outbreak of the Civil War in 1861, the oath was augmented to include a promise to defend the Constitution against all enemies, domestic and foreign. In 1868, the war over and the Union preserved, the order was changed to place foreign enemies before domestic. The oath I will now ask Secretary Rice to repeat dates from that time. I, Condoleezza Rice, do solemnly swear.
I, Condoleezza Rice, do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend.
That I will support and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
Against all enemies.
Against all enemies.
Foreign and domestic.
Foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith.
That I will bear true faith.
And allegiance to the same.
And allegiance to the same.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation.
Without any mental reservation.
Or purpose of evasion.
Or purpose of evasion.
Condoleezza Rice, do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all of the enemies masses tells me to, and defines as our enemies, foreign, as in the Iraqi people, in our war on terrorism, and domestic, as in black folks, in our war on drugs, amongst other things, and that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the imperial financial military capitalist empire, that I take this obligation freely, for I am, in essence, a Negro integrationist. Yeah, and Condoleezza Rice, soon you and others like you will be dead Negro integrationists. The only good Negro integrationist is a dead Negro integrationist. You know what time it is. Slave time. Check it. You're listening to 104.1, 101.1 Santa Cruz, 106.7 Illinois, LUVER.com, the world, radioforall.net, the universe, and check out the Slave Revolt blog. Just type in Slave Revolt Radio in your Google web, and you'll know what time it is. Tonight, we're going to shoot our way into the Beyond the Shadow segment and deal with the Negro integrationist concept. And then we're going to wrap it up with a couple of things on what blasphemy and obscenity really mean. So we got all that and a hell of a lot more on 104.1. slave. Revolt.
Attention, seekers everywhere. I was right. Everything I knew was wrong.
Time it is. We're about to blast into the Beyond the Shadow segment, and what we're going to deal with is this whole concept of the Negro integrationist. As society continues to be more and more gumped up, any Negro in a high place is somehow believed as an advancement for the masses of people in this society, black people especially, an advancement for the nation as a whole. We're going to examine a little bit that whole concept and construct and what it means for people who have historically have placed human rights, self-determination, and liberation as a priority, not only for themselves, but for humanity. Starting off with this Negro integrationist construct, here is Condoleezza Rice accepting her new position that has recently been vacated from Colin Cancer Powell, or by Colin Cancer Powell. Let's see what she has to say, and then let's take it from there. Check it out.
I want to thank the members of my family and my friends who are here, a number here from Birmingham, Alabama, and they represent generations of Rices and Rays who believed that a day like this might somehow be possible. I'm honored by your confidence in me, Mr. President, and I'm deeply grateful for the opportunity you've given me to serve as this country's 66th Secretary of State. Let me say, too, in echoing the President's comments, that I'm indeed fortunate to succeed a man of the character and quality of Colin Powell, who served with such distinction, who's done so much to strengthen the State Department, so much to carry forward America's message and goals, and so much to help me personally in so many ways. In the past 4 years, America has seen great trials and great opportunities. Under your leadership, Mr. President, our nation has risen to meet the challenges of our time, fighting tyranny and terror, and securing the blessings of freedom and prosperity for a new generation. Now it's time to build on those achievements to make the world safer and even more free. We must use American diplomacy to help create a balance of power that favors freedom. The time for diplomacy is now. Standing for the cause of liberty is as old as our country itself. Indeed, it was our very first Secretary of State, Thomas Jefferson, who said, "The God who gave us life gave us liberty at the same time." America's story is the story of men and women ceaselessly striving to ensure that we as a nation live up to the ideals set forth by our forefathers. Our founders realized that they, like all human beings, were flawed creatures, and that any government created by man would not be perfect. Even the great authors of our liberty sometimes fell short of their ideals, even Thomas Jefferson himself. Yet, our forebearers established a democratic system of, by, and for the people that contained within it the means for citizens and of conviction and of courage to correct its flaws.
Now, right there, you could have an idea of how sick things are and how sick a person that a Condoleezza Rice is. But many people consider her as an example of other for other blacks to follow, a successful, educated Negro, one that has successfully navigated her way into some of the highest reaches of power within this particular society, articulate, brave, etc., etc., etc. But the reality is that when she talks about she's proud to help carry forth some of America's goals, and that basically Colon Cancer Powell is passing on the baton to her. What baton is he passing on? The baton of a deceitful weapons of mass destruction baton, an imperial baton, a baton that justified the invasion into someone else's land off of false claims, killing hundreds of thousands as of yet, and may now move into a genocidal reign. But see, this is the type of negrette that the Bill Cosbys of the world would want the average black people to look up to. After all, she has proper diction. She has the proper education. The fact that she's a homicidal maniac is not relevant to these Negro integrationists, because to be a Negro integrationist, that means basically you have to strip away the historical passion, the historical outlook, the historical perspective of the core and masses of black people who have put forth things like self-determination, human rights as a foundation of a human goal and attainability. So the fact that over 65% of the black masses did not support this imperial war into Iraq is irrelevant, because that's not where imperial corporate politicized, meaning politicized within the imperial construct, America gives its nod of approval to blacks. That type of stuff is to be ridiculed by the imperial corporate structure. The Negroes that are considered successful, tolerant, are the obedient ones that are willing to integrate within to this capitalist market system without any hint of reservation of what this imperial nation and where this imperial nation is leading the world. So she's stripped away, if she ever had any soul, and Goose steps along with the whole hierarchical white male patriarchal supremacist system that this country was built upon. She is in essence a Negro integrationist, and that's what it means. She talks about how America has risen and reached out for the challenge of its time to fight terrorism and oppression. I mean, this is this Orwellian doublespeak. But if you're a Negro integrationist, one of the things you have to do is integrate your own lingo, your own perspective into the imperial order. That's how they're willing to integrate you in. They're not going to allow someone with a perspective that's counter the imperial grip. So what does it mean to be a Negro integrationist? Basically, a Negro with some black and brown skin slapped on your head, that's pro-imperialist. A killer with a Negro mask. Now, next, Rice goes into the impatient patriots of America who also tried to secure freedom. Let's see what Rice means by that, and then let's take it from there. Check it.
The enduring principles enshrined in our Constitution made it possible for impatient patriots like Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln and Martin Luther King to move us ever closer to our founding ideals. And so it is only natural that through the decades, America would associate itself with those around the world who also strive to secure freedom for themselves and for their children. September 11th, 2001, made us see more clearly than ever how our values and our interests are linked and joined across the globe. That day of fire made us see that the best way to secure a world of peace and hope is to build a world of freedom. We do not simply seek the absence of terrorism. We seek a world where the aspirations for freedom of men and women triumph. Today, it is more fitting than ever that our nation should pursue a foreign policy that is grounded in democratic principles and aligns itself with the efforts of all those around the globe who share our love of liberty.
More Orwellian speak again. First, where she talks about how we seek a world where freedom triumphs. Here you have a situation where 40 million plus people don't have health insurance in the richest industrial country in the world. You have well over a million people locked up in its prison system. A prison system that is in part designed as a tool of controlling the masses of population from revolting and crystallizing a class consciousness. That's all part of the imperial war on the masses of poor and black people within this country. Its roots are based in that. The prison system is basically a containment factory for the imperialist class. All one has to do is read books like Search and Destroy, and one gets a fairly good idea of how this construct has been designed. During the whole war on drugs stuff, many of the things that you see people crying about now concerning the war on terror and how people have been put in these pigeonholes of being a terrorist suspect were long developed during the war on drugs construct. If you came into an airport and you were a young black male, well-dressed, a young black male in sporting clothes, an old black male, well-dressed, old black male in, casual clothes, except right down the line, you were a DEA suspect and could and did often get jacked up. This is how people from Bill Russell, you know, the legendary basketball player, to LeVar Burton, who was driving a nice car in Gilroy, get jacked up. And under this whole war on drugs construct, because it's just used in the same way before there was, quote unquote, the official war on terrorism. It was used as a way of targeting the undesirables and smashing them or in any kind of uniformity out of existence. This is how the imperial construct works. So when this coon Rice talks about seeking a world of freedoms, and you see these freedoms from the onset be set on fire, it's just hocus pocus rhetoric. Now also, she talks about the so-called impatient patriots like Frederick Douglass. You know, Frederick Douglass was someone that they were trying to kill when he helped lead revolts and stuff. Frederick Douglass was a slave on revolt, literally. You had, she mentions King. Now, many people know I'm not really a big fan of King, but it's pretty apparent that there's more than a good possibility that the government killed King. So it's easy to, you know, kind of usurp these people's images and all of that type of, after they've been done away with, when you have a society that allows the official corporate mechanized construct to construct a nice narrow soundbite image of these people and what they're supposed to represent that fits right in nice like a McDonaldized package of the Imperial America construct. But that's what you expect from a Negro integrationist, someone that will use people who are part of the black experience and came out of the black experience and twist it so that it is becomes a part of the imperial framework and outlook of things. Now next, Reed Brody, a special councilman on human rights from Human Rights Watch, gives a revelation on what it means basically to be someone who has integrated their soul into the matrix of the Imperial Order, like Condoleezza Rice has. Hold on a sec.
What is perhaps most interesting in all of these documents is what is not there. You know, for 3 years, the government has been on notice that prisoners were being tortured and abused. From the beginning in Afghanistan, I mean, remember the pictures of John Walker Lind with, duct tape to a stretcher. The Washington Post reported it back in 2002 about prisoners being subjected to stress and duress tactics in Afghanistan. We, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty, Red Cross, have all been, not to mention, you know, through the chain of command, reports of abuse and torture and even murder. But what you don't find in these documents, in 3 years' time, is Donald Rumsfeld or anyone at a higher level saying, this has got to stop. You know, you find a lot, I mean, the new documents have got a lot of interesting stuff, as you've talked about, new revelations about abuses, the FBI, you know, and professional law enforcement people being stunned and dismayed and disheartened at what they saw going on. What you never see is somebody saying, this is wrong. And the only conclusion you can draw from all of that is that this was policy. And so for me, what really comes through from all of this is that although the administration knew that, you know, all of this was happening and obviously in many respects caused it to happen, and we can talk about that. I mean, proving illegal interrogation techniques, proving the use of guard dogs, proving hooding, proving, you know, shackling and stuff like that. What is just as interesting is what is not there. There's never any attempt for 3 years to correct the situation. And I believe that that in itself speaks volumes, not only about the political liability, but even about the potential criminal liability of higher officials.
So once again, you have a situation where, as Brody is outlining, to integrate into this system basically means to be emancipated from any kind of humanistic allegiance to the rest of humanity. So those who are a proponent of Negro integrationism, of the likes of Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice, are basically those who are trying to advocate black people in this country to relieve themselves of their historical process, pattern in history, and submit themselves back on to Massa's plantation. Be a servant to Massa, not only on his plantation, but on the global plantation. Be a betrayer to everything that your people have historically stood for in the past. Now get to, go on to another Negro integrationist. Let's go up and, check out this discussion about Armstrong Williams. You know, Armstrong Williams is the Negro who was found out to be taking money from Massa, the Bush administration, $241,000, at least on this particular issue, to basically parrot the line of Massa on the whole No Child Left Behind. Once again, Armstrong Williams is looked at as a successful Negro, as a Negro integrationist. And this right-wing Negro has made a living of going around bashing other black people, especially the poor, for not being a successful Negro integrationist. Yet, as it turns out, he not only has the American flag wound up his behind, but the cash that Master used to buy his soul and to keep him running 24 hours a day. So let's check out Pacifica Radio's Hard Knock Radio with Davey D and Brian Copeland, who's from 810 KGO. It's a little AM liberal talk show. And Vira Kajaya, she's some sister who wrote the book Don't Believe the Hype and some other stuff. They discuss the whole issue of Armstrong Williams. Let's check out what they have to say, and then let's us take it from there. Check this out.
Reporters in the A levels are the ones who are really the strong advocates, the touch points that can really go out there and push these messages. You're going to be the ones that get the, not only the guests, but you're going to be the ones that are flown.
The ones who are the friends, or considered friends of the administration.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say the one thing is I would disagree with you that he sold himself cheap, because number one, what makes you think that this was going to be the end of it? You know, this may have just been the foot inside the door. And also, what makes you think
that
this was the first thing?
He should have gotten it all up front.
I'll tell you what's interesting.
He got all he's going to get. What's interesting is, now based upon what I have read, it's a lot more extensive than that. That on his TV show, yes, he admitted that there was advertising. There were a couple of actual spots that were run. But in addition to that, he also had to interview a couple of times a year Ron Page. He had to go out and espouse to black people the merits of, to supposedly to a black audience, the merits of No Child Left Behind. So that's where the cynicism and how disingenuous this administration is when it comes to African American people. That's where that all comes in. But it's a lot worse than that, because I was reading a thing today. If you look online, The Nation, they reported today that he got caught backstage, like in the last week, in the last couple of days, talking to a pundit by the name of David Korn, who says that he caught him off guard, saying, "Look, I'm not the only one," and then tried to back away from that.
Oh, I'm sure.
So the question is, you have to look at how many other conservative commentators out there are being paid to push a message, are being paid specifically to go out and push a message. If you look at the things that Armstrong Williams has said, he was on Wolf Blitzer last month, where he told a big lie that Iraq was responsible for 9/11. He was debating my friend Bernie Warden, and Bernie nailed him on that. The big lie. You can't, I mean, Bush has come out and said that it's not true, there's no connection.
But did he get a contract where he has to say that for the next...
Yeah, who knows?
So once again, you have a situation where, you know, Williams, you know, you see him on This Week, you know, America's Black Forum. He's, you know, he was part of what's called the Lincoln Review. This was a little Negro clique organization that basically was a right wing servant group of Negroes to the white supremacist imperial order. Clarence Thomas was a part of the organization. These Negroes were so wretched and bad that they offered their services and gave their services to the apartheid government when it existed, and would come out as spokesmen for the apartheid government to try to make it appear that the apartheid system wasn't so bad. So the apartheid government would pay these Negroes in the Lincoln Review to come out and try to give a nice face on apartheid in South Africa. And these Negroes would come out and spin it
well, you know, it, you know, South Africa ain't, you know, such a bad place to live. You know, look at how black people are living elsewhere on the African continent. In the same way that now he's a paid agent for the imperial administration within this country. But these Negroes are considered successful and they're rewarded within the hierarchical construct of the imperial order. So when, look, Clarence Thomas, who was part of the Lincoln Review before he got his little judgeship, you know, as Supreme in the Supreme Court, being a good Negro integrationist, he was rewarded. So he ends up getting, you know, a higher position and stuff. This is, or, you know, another position. Pats on the back. Armstrong Williams, who's another doofus. These are intellectual midgets. They're little men. Yet, he has his own TV show. He's on other shows. He's syndicated. You know, he has his own little radio network all hooked up. Many of the supremacists within this society, liberal supremacists and conservative supremacists, Democrat supremacists and Republican supremacists, progressive supremacists and pacifist supremacists, they'll turn to Negroes like Armstrong Williams as a way of battering black people who, quote unquote, have issues with society or have a certain amount of reservation about what it means to, quote unquote, integrate your soul into this society. Now, as these cats were talking on the little Hard Knock, Brian Copeland says, you know, he disagrees that Armstrong sold himself cheap because, you know, we don't know how much he got paid overall on other things. Well, I guess if you look at things from a monetary value, that's how you're going to look at it. That's a Negro integrationist concept right there, because there is no price for your own soul, for your own dignity. Armstrong Williams is an assassin against the working class. He helped self-destruct the working class's means of existence, you know, health care, social security platforms, public schools, in the same way that he's a propagandist and helps assassin and helps set up the road for assassination through his propaganda for the U.S. military imperial machine in Iraq. He's a propagandist for it. These are Negro integrationists, and these are basically defeatful, low-life scoundrels that in no way should be emulated whatsoever. They're criminals. They should be done away with. That's the only thing they're good for, being done away with. Now, next, on Davy D's Hard Knock Radio, Cedric Muhammad. He's from this blackelectric.com, this kind of little website type thing where, you know, whatever. Anyway, he goes into his concepts of standards on this whole issue of Armstrong Williams and Williams the Negro integrationist. So let's check out what he has to say.
Cedric, you pointed out, and probably pretty accurately, that this has long been going on, and that the Clinton administration definitely had those type of relationships with journalists. And so with that in mind, should we not be surprised at all when we hear these things coming out? And if we're not surprised, what should we be doing to counter that, or what should we be doing when dealing with media and some of the pundits that are being tossed in front of us day in and day out?
I think we need to hold everybody to one standard, which is all the ideas coming from you in any way influenced by forces outside of you, and in what way? For instance, the point I was making earlier. I heard somebody from the National Association of Black Journalists condemning Strong. But I've been in the presence of those same journalists on conference calls during the Gore-Lieberman campaign who were asking for money for editorial that they had written in support of Kennedy. So what we have to look for is, one, is there anything anymore true journalist, somebody who's supposedly objective, fair, and can have dispassionate analysis, free of any outside forces? Or are we in a new era where somebody like Armstrong, who's a commentator, who has he's an entrepreneur, he has his own company, can form relationships, doesn't say that he has to follow any ethical standards as a journalist, can make any type of advocacy on his program? I mean, another media that you guys should consider is the financial media. This stuff goes on all the time when people are rating stocks and analysts on CNBC and Bloomberg. So I think the things that are happening are more having to do with the change in the media world, the rise of the Internet, than necessarily a political ideology that's more corrupt than any other. I think Armstrong is just the tip of the iceberg. Let me just say this. I spent a lot of time in research today, and I was amazed at how much grant money, how many partnerships there are with government agencies and media outlets. One also to look at is the Department of Health and Human Services has a major minority outreach program on health issues, and they coordinate that with ABC, and they use Tom Joyner and Tabitha Smiley and others. So I think, you know, is the person self-describing themselves as an ethical professional is the first thing I look for. The second thing I look for is, are they in any way advocating something that the government has asked them to put in it or insert in a way that styles itself as anything other than an advertisement? And I think Armstrong failed in some respect on that second point.
Armstrong, in the true humanist stand, is a failure, period. I mean, please. Now, when this Cedric Muhammad talks about how he's listened to some of these Negroes in the National Association of Black Journalists asking for money for editorials for, you know, the Democrats, well, why didn't he say something? Why didn't he speak up about it if this is true, what he's saying? Because basically these Negroes are selling their soul if they were doing it in the same way that Armstrong Williams was. In other words, looking for a payoff regardless of their own political views and opinion. So while Armstrong Williams obviously needs to be attacked, exposed, and ridiculed and shown what a Negro integrationist puppet he is, so should any of these other type of Negroes. But why didn't he speak out? Meaning Muhammad, who has this little website about seeing these other types. Why just go along with the game plan unless it doesn't really bother you? Now that it gets blown out, then you discuss it? I mean, what is this? I mean, this is some sick stuff. This is just chivalry. So whose interest are you really serving if you're not speaking out and challenging these coons, unless you're part of that coon apparatus? That's the real world. Now, Muhammad says, you know, what we have to ask, is there any more true journalism in America? I mean, now, wait a minute now. We know that there are journalists with integrity out there. Now, they may not be within the corporate structure, of course. They may have to find their own way and navigate their own way with a certain amount of autonomy, do books sometimes, make, documentaries, you know, to supplement themselves. But no one doubts, who has any integrity at all within their soul, that John Pilger, for instance, is a true journalist. You got people like Bob Perry, who is one of the first to truly break the whole crack CIA connection. Gary Webb was a true journalist. You know, let's put things in perspective. It's not that they're not out there. It's just that you have journalists who are under siege within this corporate structure. So what that means is that those of us who are down with true integrity, we should know who and who not to support and how we can support each other and who we need to wage our attack on. Not just throw your hands up in the air and just say they're all doing it, because there's obviously a class difference between and a class association about what's going on. So to blur the whole thing, when there are many journalists out there and many people doing solid work, is somewhat not only cynical, there's a certain sickness behind all of that. So to spin it to like, you know, are we in a new era where, you know, the Armstrong Williamses of the world form alliances? These are Negro integrationists. It's a logical conclusion. As I mentioned before, Armstrong Williams was a part of the Lincoln Review with, you know, coons like Clarence Thomas. They made their deal at the crossroads with Satan on how to they were going to construct themselves. And in doing that, it was clear that the last thing on their mind was aligning themselves with true justice. Now next, we have Beriah Kajaya. She goes into the hypocrisy of Armstrong and the Boy George administration. Check it out.
He definitely failed. I mean, I agree, Cedric, that the game is dirty and the game has changed in ways that make it easier to be dirty. But I just don't think we can cut people slack. I mean, I think that now more than ever, the reason that this came out was because, I forget which news organization, but
USA Today
put in the Freedom of Information request.
Yeah.
And actually, there has been a huge, the Bush administration has spent $6 billion classifying documents that should never have been classified.
Right.
Documents like this. So I think it's part of a larger question of government secrecy. This administration is constantly covering its tracks. And there are a lot of sweetheart deals, including ones that have nothing to do with media, all the sweetheart deals for Halliburton. And I think that in a way we've become so cynical that we're sort of like, well, that's just the way the game is played. At some point you can say that's the way the game is played, but you can still try to fight against it. You can still try to fight for some kind of ethics that...
Well, I just think, you know, did you say the same thing when the war on drugs was being fought and companies were being given actual credit and money?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm totally against that.
But yeah, I think he's asking it more rhetorically.
But I do think that companies were heavily criticized for being complicit with the government and having some kind of...
I think the criticism can't be left or right. It has to be professional oriented.
Okay, but I guess my question is, has there been, to your knowledge, anybody tied with the Clinton administration or with any other Democratic administration who has been an actual paid propagandist
yes.
for that administration?
The point that I'm talking about, you can look at Salon magazine in 2000. They thoroughly exposed under the Clinton administration what was happening with the war on drugs, with USA Magazine, U.S. News and World Report, for actually getting money for having certain editorial content and for having, they were getting credits as well. But what I'm saying to you is these programs, my point is not left or right. My point is government has been doing this for some time now. And so to make Armstrong a poster child, I think is good. And I think to expose him is good, but you have to do it in the context that our media outlets, our columnists, our bloggers, our journalists, and our publishers have been on the tape, not just by intelligence agencies, but by the government.
Now, when Muhammad goes into this whole thing about, you know, people being on the take on the war on drugs, and did Beriah speak out against it, and you know, the Democrats when they were doing this propagandist thing, you know, because the criticism, you know, can be on the left or right. First of all, the Democrats are not on the left. And and Clinton and them basically taking the baton of the war on drugs is basically that being done within one, from one administration to another, basically to continue its a war on the masses, primarily of Black and Latino people. That was just that's part of their war on the working class within those particular segments. So of course the Democrats and Republicans are going to do it as a containment apparatus. As a matter of fact, the real war on drugs in its modern sense got started. I'm not talking about the whole reefer madness and all of that, because those were other elements, historical elements, you know, and all of that. But in its more modern form, was done under Nixon's administration when he helped reinstitute and consolidate with Haldeman the Southern Strategist Program, where, you know, law and order, war on crime, war on drugs, so on and so forth, was their mode of operandi. And of course, it basically meant war on Black. Many of the administrations since that time have taken that mantle to wage war on various segments within the working class within this country. And Clinton's no different, because he's not some leftist or anything. I mean, this is just blurring the line. He's part of the Clinton crime bill, the ruling class apparatus that's dedicated into smashing and containing and controlling segments of the working class. That's the real world. So to get into this, you know, it's not left or right. You know, this is how things often get blurred from its reality. It's kind of sick in many ways. It's like not looking at things in their totality. When you see issues going on, let's say, like with Cynthia McKinney. Cynthia McKinney, you know, held office, you know, congressional office at one time. And she spoke out about Palestine. The AIPAC lobby consolidated their forces to smash her up. Now, you'll have many of the people who will go on and on about the AIPAC lobby and stuff as being all powerful. But in reality, no one is truly going to make true change for the masses of the people in this world, or for Black people in particular within this country, trying to operate within the Democratic Party. It's not designed to. As a matter of fact, the Democratic Party is designed to be disciplined by lobbyist institutions like AIPAC. So it's not just the power, quote unquote, of AIPAC. It's the power of how these lobbyist institutions are set up in general. You have a situation right now where even Boy George's own scientist is admitting that we may have crossed the Rubicon concerning this global warming escapade. Polar ice caps are melting, things are going haywire, etc., etc. Yet, the all-powerful, in a sense, you know, within the construct of the capitalist order, these powerful lobbyist institutions, meaning the fossil fuel industry, are able to stop any type of just basic reforms to help stabilize the environment. And they have such undue influence on Congress and so on and so forth, once again, that no real measures are being put in place. Now, this shouldn't be any surprise, because all of these lobbyist institutions have incredible power, undue power within the society. That's how they're designed. And if you join the Democratic Party, you know or should know that you are going to be limited, because part of being in the Democratic Party is limiting the true autonomy of the masses of people. That's how they're designed. That's what they're there for. They're in opposition to the working class. So you have a situation where 90% of the commercial fishery have been evaporated, swordfish, bluefin tuna, etc., etc. But once again, the powerful fish lobby are able to distort any true form of regulations or control on the overfishing of the fish population, which is basically being wiped out. You look at the meat industry. These cows coming out of the meat industry, it's getting close to the point, if not beyond the point, where it's not even really safe to call them cows, because they're so pumped up and have ingested so many things that are outside of the norm for real bovines, and basically they're just walking fleshes of death for anyone that consumes them. We just had, it appears, the Mad Cow Part 2 breakout. Yet, because of the powerful meat industry, we have not even been able to get even the basic types of reform on how these cows are produced in the factory or otherwise. So if you had someone in the Democratic Party speaking out about what's going on in the meat industry and how horrible it is, it wouldn't be too surprising for the meat industry to rise up, beat them down, like the meat industry broke Oprah down in her commercial industry of the TV medium, because that's how it's designed to do that. My whole point is that unless these things are looked into the totality, and unless we look outside of the box of trying to operate within the matrix, which is what you're doing if you're working within the Democratic Party or the NAACP or any of these little weak-ass organizations, unless you go outside of that box, you'll forever be controlled, consciously or unconsciously, willingly or unwillingly. That's the real world. So all of this other type of stuff is just a hocus pocus talk, which Negro integrationists don't mind doing. Now, next, David D. Asks, is this Williams issue going to go away? Is it going to fade away? Let's see what they have to say. Check it out.
So the question is, what is going to be the next step? Is this going to be swept under the rug, or is this just going to open up the can of worms and we're going to have reform? Well, I'll start off with what you said.
If it's not politicized, then you'll have true reform. Because all you need to do is do what USA Today did, of course, in the media. But the Congress people can review these contracts. And I know I've had experience as an economist. We've worked on government grants. There's a tremendous amount of waste and corruption and misuse of funds that goes on. If you have vigilant members of Congress, mayors, etc., you can get to the bottom of where this money's going. But essentially, these grants go out, the money goes out, and there's no accountability. So if there were greater accountability, I think we'd see incidents like this with this waste and certainly more than questionable use of funds.
Okay, and lastly, do we connect COINTELPRO practices to this? Not necessarily with Armstrong, but I mean just the practice of what goes on. Is this connected in any sort of way, Cedric?
Oh, absolutely. This continues that tradition where you have journalists who are on the tape, who are speaking points of views other than themselves. And again, I think we need to look back at what happened during the Clinton administration with the drug policy, because all that stuff's coming up again. What is going on with all these commercials that say if you buy drugs, you're supporting terrorism? What is that really all about? We'll be seeing them during the Super Bowl.
Which means, and then you wonder why the newscast doesn't cover the alternative viewpoint.
Yep.
That's how it plays out. Brian, your last comments and thoughts?
Well, here's how I see it playing out. I see the Democrats making a bigger issue out of it. You know, Nancy Pelosi's talking about a congressional investigation already. What's going to happen next is you're going to find out that there are more Armstrong Williams. Those on the right are going to find out who's doing it on the left. There are going to be another handful of people who are going to be completely outed and smeared, and then it'll go away.
Will they learn to hide their hands better?
They will probably learn to hide their hands better, but it's not going to stop.
No,
absolutely not.
Okay, so we shouldn't trust media, I guess it's...
Well...
All right, you know, all of this type of stuff about, you know, if it's not politicized, there could be greater accountability. This is a politicized society. The whole situation of the capitalist market system is all politics. Of course it's going to be politicized. It's just that one cannot depend on those within the system to make any change. But see, this is that type of Negro integrationist mentality. You know, it's kind of comical in a sense because you see it all around. You know, there's a tennis player named Leighton Hewitt. He's from Australia. And he was in a tennis match with a guy named James Blake, a black player named James Blake. And during a match, Leighton Hewitt complained to the umpire about a black linesman who had called two foot faults on him in the third set. So Leighton blows up about it. The umpire agreed with the black linesman, and then Leighton goes up to the umpire during the tennis match and says, "Look at him." And he gestures at the black linesman. And then he goes, "And look at him." And he points at Blake. And he goes, "Now you tell me what's the similarity. You put him off the court. Get him off the court." In other words, he's implying that since James Blake is black and the linesman is black, that the linesman was intentionally sabotaging him, meaning Hewitt, by calling these bogus calls off on him. So obviously he's implying that there's some kind of hidden or not so hidden racial agenda by black players and linesmen to defeat white opponents and stuff. So there's no professionalism or anything, you know, when it comes to black folks. You know, even in some silly game, they just automatically start, you know, getting into this devious stuff. Now, how did Blake respond? Did he just whip Hewitt's ass like he should have? Did he call him on it in a fiery way and challenge him on it? Well, Blake is a Negro integrationist. So this is how Blake responds. Quote, he said there was a similarity between the line judge and myself. My reaction was to try to win the match. It did bother me a little bit, but I figured that it was in the heat of the moment. When he's fighting out there and not thinking about being politically correct. I hope anything derogatory by it, but I can't speak for him. I hope he didn't mean it in a racist way. If he has a racial problem, he has to be the one that deals with that. I'll try to give him the benefit of the doubt. He has this me against the world attitude that makes him play better. That's how he gets pumped up. I try not to let it mar the match. I don't like to slam other players. I wanted to put it in the past and move on. Unquote. Shut the hell up, you punk-ass Negro integrationist. This is some sick stuff. Because, see, this is how this stuff just keeps going on and on, in part. Because, let's say, Hewitt's just a player. Blake's a player. For the most part, they're not the ones who are going to suffer because they're in this specialized type of situation. But say there's someone in Hewitt's type of mentality that picks people who get hired to be these line judges. So they'll look and say, okay, well, who's so-and-so playing? Oh, he's playing that black guy, and he's a line judge, and he's black. Wow, he may, you know, get into some kind of Negro solidarity with him and cheat the white player out. I'm not going to hire him. See, and you couldn't prove it because he wouldn't have to say it and be out front about it because he's not really on the court. He's the one behind the scenes picking his stuff. But see, the Negro integrationist wants to go along and get along. He doesn't even look at how it means and what it means. He wasn't the only one insulted, meaning Blake. He also insulted the other cat and black people in general, just, you know, basically balkanizing us into this kind of, you know, a simplistic Negro weak form of Negro solidarity type of thing. I mean, this is a sickness. But this is what it means when you hear someone like James Blake to be a good Negro integrationist and not challenge the mentality of those who put that gook out there. Hold on a sec. All right, last up, we're going to deal with a few notes from Draptomania. And what we're going to deal with tonight on a couple of notes from Draptomania is the obscenity game. You know, every time some little Negro does something, it seemed like the end of the world, something more obscene than one could imagine. Recently, professional football player decided to simulate taking his pants down and shaking his rear end at the fans at Green Bay, that being Randy Moss for the Minnesota Vikings. I'm going to let you check out a little clip of this discussion between Gary Radnick on the KNBR, this little sports talk radio show, with one of his little silly undergrown adults listeners who spend, you know, seems like every waking hour going on and on about sports and the conduct of athletes and all this other nonsense. And let's hear how this caller considers this action so obscene in the face of, it appears, you know what. Check it out.
Football, but you sure as hell don't want to act like him. He's a self-centered jerk.
That is true, and you're right.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So that's how you get around the part of hey, it's no big deal. I mean, everybody has somebody. If it's your grandmother, if it's your mother, your father, your son, your daughter, everybody has somebody that can kind of tell him what's up. And that's what, hell, with Bonds and the Cream, it's great to watch him play, but I don't want you taking steroids. You know what I'm saying? Watch these guys, enjoy them for what they do, but don't take it any further, and you'll be all right.
Gary, but that's the problem. There are people out there who take it further. There are kids out there who watch and who will idolize Randy Moss and who will grow up to think that his actions and what he did were what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, Dave, you know something? You're probably right, and I'm just carrying it from my own point of view. But since I was a little boy, I was taught that these guys, meet them in person, spend some time around them, you wouldn't let them in your house, a great many of these people who we idolize from television. It's the same way on radio and TV. You hear somebody or you watch them and you think, what a great guy. Then you meet him, guy's a jerk. So my point for the 19th time is, the reason Randy Moss's action, hey, I didn't say it was good, but I rolled over and had another potato chip. You know, so what?
We defend these guys, Gary.
Who defend them? I just said I wouldn't walk across the street to see them. But I'm telling you, when he's playing football, he entertains me.
Yes, you're right, Gary. But then there's an excuse for his actions.
All right. Hey, Dave, you're probably right, and I'm running out of steam, so I'll let you go.
Have a good one.
You betcha. Richard's on KMBR. Hi, Rich.
Now, you can see how sick this is. Here's this grown adult, basically the sportscaster, Gary Radness, is basically saying, look, don't be obsessed with, you know, celebrity figures. Just move on. But this guy keeps on and on, the caller. You know, we defend these guys. And I don't know what he's talking about. And then, these guys act this way, and then you have people who believe, or kids who believe his actions are what you're supposed to do, and so on and so forth. All he did was shake his little behind and pretend that, at the crowd and pretend that he was pulling down his pants. Now, this little juvenile act is actually something he was doing in response to how the Green Bay fans have and currently historically act towards the opposing team. Their team is about to play. The players actually counted 16 fans on their way to the game who had pulled down their pants, literally pulled down their pants. They didn't simulate it, and shook their little behinds and not so little beer behinds at the players. In one incident, one dude saw a whole family, you know, the son, the wife, the husband, you know, all shaking their little behinds as the players are riding up in the bus and stuff. Now, all those connected with sports know this type of stuff, but they ignore it. And then when Moss does his little juvenile act back towards them, they act like this is the most obscene thing in the world. Now, what's kind of sick about this also, in the real sense, is like you have currently things going on, like the police tasering a 6-year-old student who was wielding a piece of glass in his hand in Florida. So you have a situation where they actually taser a 6-year-old kid, which shoots up to 50,000 volts of electric current in Miami to subdue a 6-year-old. Now, how obscene is that? Yet, that does not resonate. you have a situation where more torture documents have been revealed and actually exposed that this has been going on not just recently, but all over the place. Guantanamo, all different agencies and stuff have been engaged in this type of stuff in the most vilest forms. It doesn't resonate. This is not obscene to the gumpified masses that have their head deep up the behind of Randy Moss screaming about his little quote-unquote obscene act. You have Rumsfeld be exposed that he had has his own little strategic support branch operation, an undisclosed, basically mercenary squad for the imperialist machine, but just within his own little network, between him and his little boys. People in Congress don't know, etc., etc. And it's been operating for 2 years. Yet, somehow, once again, this is not considered obscene. This does not resonate amongst the masses of people within this particular society. You have a Tacoma cop who was recently convicted of raping a 12-year-old girl. This is something he did a few years ago. So like when she was 9 years old. But somehow this action and other vile actions by these sick cops does not resonate. You have recently also Mark Thatcher, you know, the son of Margaret Thatcher. Him and a bunch of little white supremacists, low lives, got caught in the southern region of Africa with all of these arms and a crew that was getting ready to perform a coup or an attempt to coup in the southern region and basically help inflame the southern region into chaos in the same way that the Congo is in chaos, so that him and other diamond merchant, you know, robbers of the continent of Africa can, you know, rip off the richness, the mineral richness and other things from the African people on in that region in the same way they have it going on strong in the Congo. Now, he gets caught red-handed. He confesses to this coup plot, murderous attempt that him and his colleagues are were planning. And what does he get? A little slap on the wrist. He has to pay a fine. No time in prison, let alone he still gets to keep his head attached to his shoulders. So here's someone who's basically a mercenary for the market imperial order. And he's allowed to just basically go back to South Africa, where he has a little home. Wait till he gets a call from his American wife, and then just fly off to America or a number of other, you know, Western nations where he has homes and outlets and things of that particular nature. You have recently a situation where once again black people were being shot for poaching at the, you know, this is all happening at the same time. If you're out poaching for animals in Africa to basically for meat, which often happens in many cases, or just basically to, you know, saw off the horns or tusk or whatever to try to get some food or some money for food by selling it to the Chinese and other people who are involved in that whole ivory trade thing, you can be shot on sight. Yet Mark Thatcher was plotting a genocidal type of program to basically thrust the whole southern region, or as much of it as possible, into chaos so him and his bandits can rip off the country, and all he gets is a slap on the wrist. See, this is what's really obscene. what's going on with Armstrong Williams, as I mentioned before, and him having all of that imperial cash shoved up his behind to be a parrot for his imperial masters as a Negro integrationist. That's obscene. But this type of and these types of issues do not resonate amongst the gumpified masses, because what they consider obscene is Randy Moss shaking his little behind at a game, a silly football game within and designed for the confusion, illusion, and basically a maintenance mechanism to get people from looking at things that are really obscene on the world and have them thinking that what really counts takes place on some silly football game. Hold on a sec. That's just about going to wrap it up for Slave tonight. It's clear that the road to freedom is not Negro integrationism. But, you know, enough of these scoundrels. It's time to jump into some blackish, brownish, brown skin. At least for a little while. That's a form of self-expression and freedom. Until the next time. Slave revolt.